Hello, this is Chris here. This is just a quick message to say our Halloween special was hit by some kind of technical curse. We had a few little problems to deal with, so some of what you're about to hear, we've had to recover from backup recordings, and we even had to cheat a bit at times and re-record some extra bits too. But it's all good stuff, so we hope you enjoy it. Cheers! Hello and welcome to Still Any Good, the podcast where we run the risk of ruining our childhoods by revisiting fondly remembered films. My name's Christopher Webb, and I'm joined by a man with an exploding red thing hanging off his face. It's Robert Johnson.
Hello. I was hoping that the concealer would have hidden the exploding pustule hanging off my face, but...
You cannot hide that.
Listeners, I just want to make this clear, listeners, I don't have bad skin.
No. Out of the two of us, Rob is definitely the handsome one of the pair.
Yeah, I we have been compared to Frodo and Gollum before, but only by me.
it's like right said Fred without the other bald one, really.
How have you been?
I'm pretty good, thank you. I did mention on Twitter earlier that because of the awful weather in Napier today, we've had torrential rain for about the last 3 days. My wife had let me in the house to do the recording, but about an hour ago the rain stopped, so I'm in the garage.
I thought you were looking pretty isolated and dingy. I didn't want to say anything.
Yeah, I put a red curtain up behind me.
I didn't want to say anything in case I was insulting your kitchen.
Makes it look a bit Twin Peaksy.
It does.
But I'll tell you something, which is also a bit creepy, a bit Lynchian. Okay. We're not alone. We have a special guest with us.
A special guest, another one.
Another one. I know, we were so famous and popular. We've got another guest. And the guest we have today
is
Fran Jolly.
Hello.
How's it going?
Hello, everyone. Hello, people of New Zealand and beyond. Thank you for having me.
Are you in Bournemouth?
It's Poole, but it's easy to say Bournemouth because people have heard of Bournemouth.
I've been to Poole Speedway and Poole Dogs. I know where Poole is.
Lovely stuff.
Well, Bournemouth's cool too. Is Harry Ramsden still there?
Of course, Harry Ramsden's, and obviously Harry Redknapp is from Bournemouth.
Oh, of course. They should call it Harry Town, shouldn't they?
I have to ask the mayor.
Now, for those who aren't aware of Fran is very important as far as social media goes. He hosts a very good Facebook and Twitter page called Comedy Podcast Devotees, which is a real good go-to if you're into comedy podcasts, particularly British podcasts.
Lovely to have you on, Fran.
So, Fran, because you're our guest, you have the amazing honour of choosing a film. Well, because it's Halloween, of course, we invited you to choose a horror film.
The film today is going to be Killer Clowns from Outer Space in 1988.
Wow.
Spooky.
It was a night like any other night. Then something happened.
Did you see that?
Something different.
It's no shooting star.
Why here? Why now? Why clowns? They've been knocking them dead all over the universe.
What are you gonna do? Knock my block off?
George Washington! Soon they'll be doing it at a theater near you.
Killer Clowns from Outer Space.
And please tell us why you chose this film.
I remember being like 10 or 11 and going down to the local independent video shop. And obviously it's quite a standard cover. And then renting it with my friend. And then, yeah, it's like, oh my god, clowns that kill people. And popcorn comes out of guns and balloon animals. This is the best film ever made. 11 years later, when I bought a multi-region DVD player, I got to watch it again, and it still was fun, and I've not watched it since.
We're hoping that you still have that impression that it is the best film ever made. That would be great.
Yeah, definitely.
Let's find out. Rob, had you seen this before?
I hadn't seen the film, but it was one of those really striking video covers that I always walk past in the video store. It always intrigued me, and even just the name, Killer Clowns from Outer Space, it's kind of like an iambic pentameter or something. It's kind of just flows. Yes, I'd never quite made the leap to watch it because I did assume it was probably a pile of turds. But of course, right now it's very zeitgeisty, isn't it? With Joker at the box office, another, of course, famous killer clown. And two recently at the box office, again a killer clown. So you know, we're really kind of hitting the cultural
zeitgeist.
Riding
the wave, aren't we?
Can you imagine if they'd got Tim Curry to appear on Killer Clowns from Outer Space in Pennywise costume? Now that would have been a movie. Kiss me, fat boy.
But very much like you, Rob, I hadn't seen Killer Clowns from Outer Space before either. I was aware of it. It was one probably around about 15, 20 years ago. I used to frequent the Empire website forums quite a lot. And it was one that was always talked about on there. But very much like you, I never got around to seeing it. Should we talk about the film a little bit? So it seems to be a family affair. Is it Chiodo brothers seem to have done pretty much everything on the credits. And I think they're special effects sort of specialists, aren't they? They've done a lot of work with sort of effects and puppetry and stuff like that in other films. I think they did stuff on Team America and Critters, I believe.
Yeah, they did the little mouse dioramas and Dinner for Schmucks too, which were amazing.
On the DVD extras, yes, the shows all their little short films they were doing since they were kids, sort of like building up to making this film, and how they've like progressed doing like stop motion effects and like perspective animation and stuff. It's really interesting. Shame that they didn't do anything else after this.
So yeah, that's them. They wrote it, directed it, produced it, sang the theme tune, printed the t-shirts. They did everything as far as the film goes.
The theme tune is amazing by the Dickies.
By the Dickies, very much, yeah.
The theme tune was a banger.
I'm pretty sad that when you go to a Halloween party, you get the Monster Mash and you get Ghostbusters, but you never get the Killer Clowns from Outer Space theme tune, and something's got to change.
It reminded me of like Primus or something. It was like a Primus song. It was like alternative alt rock of the 90s. That was great.
So, let's talk about the film. So, my first note does say fun opening music. So, well done, Fran. You anticipated that. And then we go straight into, is it Sergeant Moody? Otherwise known as Dean Wormer from Animal House.
Yeah, John Vernon.
And he doesn't like those young people, does he?
He doesn't. Still doesn't.
Mm. And Officer Mooney is an absolute dick. Probably the biggest dick in the entire film. And he just hates kids. But when I say kids, I mean anyone over the age of 25 years old and under 40 who seemingly have done nothing apart from being younger than him.
Very much so.
Because then we get to some very, very old teenagers who are all making out on the hill. That's their sort of make-out point. And yeah, they're not strictly young people because they're all drinking champagne.
And they look like they're in their 30s.
Why does Officer Mooney seem to keep mentioning that they're rich kids when at no point has anyone ever said how rich you are or anyone ever mentions money? Yeah, apart from the champagne drinking, which I guess means that they're all rich.
So everybody's heavy petting is interrupted, unfortunately, by those two brothers. Sorry, I forget their surname. What is their surname?
The Terenzi brothers.
The Terenzi brothers turn up with their ice cream van. A bit of a cock block.
It's kind of weird with the Terenzi brothers because you'd never have them in like the post-hashtag MeToo world. Two guys who can buy an ice cream van and get some ladies by buying, you know, like a fab ice cream. I can seduce someone ice cream.
That's how I got my wife. She calls me Mr. Softy. But it obviously works because they've got two jolly girls in the back with them.
Yeah.
Who they've offered free ice cream to.
But their shirts are staying on.
Yes. So obviously they drive away with the two girls who are enjoying their fabs. And then we cut to our protagonists, Mike and Debbie. Mike Tobacco, to use his full name.
Mike Tobacco, yeah.
Yeah. It's such a great name. Yeah.
Just a great pointless comedy surname there.
Yeah, it's fantastic. And Debbie Stone, who I did check on IMDb, Rob, and she's been in one of our other films. She was one of the girls in Class.
Oh, was she in Class?
She was one of the ones in that scene that we hated.
Well, you have to narrow that down, Chris. And of course, John Allen Nelson, who is Deputy Dave. I'm very familiar with him. I used to watch Santa Barbara as a child. He was Warren Lockridge in Santa Barbara. And of course, he was John D. Court in Baywatch.
That's right.
I think he had to retire from Baywatching due to some sort of, he was going blind or something. Ooh. Yeah, and not a very effective lifeguard as a blind person.
Too many dogs were drowning, weren't they?
Yeah.
But Mike and Debbie, back to Mike and Debbie. They're in a sort of an inflatable dinghy in the back of the car, which I thought was a nice touch, probably a bit more comfortable than a blanket.
Yeah, I thought it made sense.
A bit squeaky, but that's all right.
Easy to clean.
Yeah, oh, absolutely, it very wipes off very easily, yeah. But wouldn't you bloody know it, they're interrupted by a shooting star or spaceship flying overhead, which seems to crash land over 1,000 miles away, as they say. But it's not, it's just in the next field. And then we meet Farmer Gene, and I have written, what the fuck? Because what the hell is going on with Farmer Gene? Because I thought, because his performance is so out there, that he was probably just like another of the Chiodos, like Chiodo's dad or something like that. But no, he's been in about 200 films.
His real name is awesome as well. Royal Dano.
That's right.
Yeah, I didn't really get the farmer's name, but I do like that he said tarnation. I don't hear enough tarnations anymore.
And, tarnation.
He then said, well, I'll be greased and fried, was the thing he said after that.
I wonder how many films his dog has made.
I thought Pooh Bear was excellent. I thought he was a really good actor.
Oh, yeah, he's great.
And what happened to Pooh Bear? Like, it just vanishes when you never see the dog again.
No, I was quite concerned about Pooh
Bear.
Well,
doesn't he leave like a bloody organ? Was there like a bloody organ? Oh, no, it was a scarf, wasn't it? It was a scarf that was left.
It was his collar, yeah.
Yeah, because at first I thought it was a glistening red piece of viscera, and then I was like, oh, this is going to be quite gory, and it was, oh no, it was a little red.
So you thought it was like a dog's kidney or something?
Yeah, I thought it was like a sort of a Jack the Ripper, but for dogs, kind of.
Jack the Russell, yeah. So Farmer Gene and Pooh Bear, they go and investigate, and they both get taken by the clowns. And this is our first look at the clowns, isn't it? This is the first time we see their faces. And I'll be honest, I really liked the way they looked.
I think they look cool. Because there's some quite good animatronics going on there, isn't there? There's some quite good facial movements, and it's almost sort of like a little bit Jim Henson. They reminded me of Hoggle from Labyrinth.
Yeah, they've got the sort of funny lip movements, haven't they? Yeah.
And same sort of Hensonian tech.
There's some great mat work in the side circus tent. Considering that it only cost $2 million, apparently the Chiodo brothers did most of the effects themselves and built most of the effects themselves and spent the $2 million just on actual production costs. A hardcore animator, so they can do it all themselves.
All the money went on the champagne in the first scene.
Champagne and dog biscuits. So we're then straight to the police station, where we meet Officer Dave for the first time with his lovely hair. Moody is sort of dragged in a couple of 80s extras from a pop video. And their crime seems to have been walking around outside.
Yeah, basically.
So Mike and Debbie, their curiosity gets the better of them, so they stop what they're doing and they go to have a look at the big top. They find this giant tent, and Mike's a bit of a prick. She's scared and wants to go home. So he pretty much says, fine, I'll leave you here on your own, and I'm going to go anyway. Different times.
First he does a very un-PC, me big chief him.
Ah, yes.
Try and find him. And we walk for many moons, and yeah, it just goes on for quite a while. And
He's a card, isn't he?
He's, yeah.
So they go into the big top, and Mike believes, and I had to write it down, he believes it's that new European, or that European new wave Circus Fantastique. Have we heard of this? We're European, Fran. Have you ever heard of the Circus Fantastique?
I have looked up New Wave, Circus Fantastique and Groupon, and I can't see any of them coming to town soon, which is a shame. But I imagine they're very mime-focused. That'd be a great band name.
They're all acting like, oh, it's really weird. We've never seen anything like this before. It's just like a giant play centre.
Yeah.
It's like a McCafe.
How does Mike actually get into the clown tent? Because that farmer guy couldn't find a door. So this suddenly becomes inside.
I seem to remember a crevice.
And this is the time I noticed that Mike has got some nice knitwear on. And I'm sure you noticed that as well, Rob, because you do love your knitwear.
I did, he did. He had a very nice woolly jumper on to go with his mullet. Just like any sort of indistinct teen / 25-year-old / 34-year-old, whatever the hell, how old he is supposed to be, would wear.
Yeah, it's like a Christmas jumper.
Yeah.
They basically wander around and eventually, after going in various rooms, they go into this room and it's full of these kind of giant pink dangly sacks.
It's an old people's home.
Yeah, yeah. It's the old people's washroom. But, and here's another tick for the film. I thought the set design was quite impressive. I liked it. For the budget that they had. It's very bright, very colourful, very imaginative.
Very vividly striking.
Have you guys ever been to a cotton candy factory? Just what you'd imagine it would look like.
No, I'd love to, though.
It'd be very nice in all those bright colours. It'd be great for... It'd be like working at Pixar or something like that, wouldn't it?
You'd get a lot of candy floss stuck to your fingers and things, though.
So they investigate, and they tear open one of the candy floss scrota. There's a big red face inside, and Mike is just furious because it's Joe Lombardo, and he keeps going on about Joe Lombardo, Joe Lombardo.
He killed Joe
Lombardo.
Who
the hell is Joe Lombardo?
He says it about 20 times.
But this is when they see a clown, and the clown chases them away with a popcorn gun, which is kind of fun.
Yeah, and it all gets stuck in her hair. She's like jumping around, there's all this popcorn stuck in her hair, it just won't go anywhere.
That's awful too. But then they're followed out by a bendy balloon sniffer dog, which I thought was
quite
funny.
That was good. I thought it was good.
Yeah, I like that. Sadly, they didn't do the stop for a piss joke, which you have to do if you've got a balloon dog. It's one of the rules.
You know, if you haven't already realised, it's at this point that you do realise that they're totally just embracing how silly the concept is.
They know exactly what they're making. It's not like... I don't know, I think something like Sharknado, where they deliberately set out to make a shit film. With this, they're trying to make the best ridiculous film they possibly can.
Yeah.
And there's a big difference there.
Best thing is easily the balloon animal dog, by far. There's a few scenes that I can remember from the past, and, like, balloon animal dog is definitely one of them.
Yeah.
It's kind of odd how, like, for 1 second it's a comedy film, and have, like, comedy music, it suddenly becomes a horror film, and it's like It or something. They have really creepy music and really quite disturbing scenes. It bounces around. I can imagine that Peter Jackson was influenced by this quite a lot.
It actually really reminded me of Braindead.
It would have been around about the same time, wouldn't it?
Yeah, give or take a year or two, yeah.
Should we ask him, Rob?
Yeah, I'll ask him. Well, he's just got the new mayor of Wellington elected. He bought the mayoralty.
Oh, really?
I'll just go ask the mayor. What does your buddy Peter think of,
bit of politics there.
A bit of local politics, the most niche kind of politics.
We've got a new mayor as well.
Oh, yeah, you have, mate.
Anyway,
Kirsten.
Sorry, Kirsten, yeah. If you want somebody to be your mayor, you get a chartered accountant. That's what I say. Anyway, back to these bloody killer clowns, eh? So they head off to the town, which we now see is called Crescent Cove.
Yeah.
And we're straight to the police station where Mike Tobacco and Debbie are trying to convince Dave that there are clowns killing people by saying, cocoons, you know. Cocoons. This is very convincing.
It would have been interesting if the movie Cocoon, they actually tried doing that. Cocoons, you know, cocoons.
That was Ron Howard's pitch.
Yeah, cocoons. And Wilfred Brimley.
But of course, Mooney's not buying it. He doesn't believe any of this nonsense. He immediately insults the kids.
Yeah, he doesn't believe anything that comes out of the mouth of someone aged under 54, as we've established.
It's weird because David mentions that he's been dating Deb. Deb then mentions that she's at school with Mike. What the hell was Dave, who's maybe in his 30s, dating a schoolgirl? That's never mentioned again.
It was a 21 Jump Street thing. Well, his surname's Hanson, like Tom Hanson, Johnny Depp's character. So that's
Oh.
Yeah. Wow. It's a shared universe.
It makes sense, yeah. But Mooney does then say, which does come up a little later, he says, well, you're not going to make a dummy out of me.
Ooh.
They thought about this script.
The love triangle, that whole dynamic kind of is pointless. They don't really do anything much with it.
It also gets a bit weird towards the end.
Yeah.
We see another clown. I don't know if you call it a killing or an abduction, because you're never sure at this point whether the big candy floss things are alive or dead. There's this strange Punch and Judy show at the bandstand.
Oh, yeah. And some creepy young teenage guy who just sort of walks up going, ah.
Standing around the park just waiting for the chance of a Punch and Judy show happening.
Absolutely hilarious. It's like,
he loves it, yeah.
I think he's like Amish on Rumspringer or something, because, you know, like, he's can't be an American... typical American teen, because he's just so fascinated and amused by it, especially when one of them disintegrates, you know. He's like, wow.
Yeah, I thought he looked a bit like Owen Jones.
And like, what time is this all happening? At the start, you kind of get the idea that it's near midnight, so kids are making out, but then it has like a shop open, and then you have like a kid like eating ice cream, like it's like 6 p.m. It's mental.
Yeah. Well, is it in Alaska, so it's constantly nighttime?
Maybe they were making out at sort of 11 a.m. or something, and it was just, that's how they do it over there.
In many ways, it's like a prequel to Insomnia, isn't it?
It would have been great if Al Pacino was wandering around there. And one of the clowns was Robin Williams.
And then they the clowns kind of invade the chemist shop, the pharmacy.
I actually found the tall skinny clown, I actually thought was quite scary. There's something about him that is unsettling.
What's your favourite clown? I think mine's definitely the short one, sort of, with all his little sad asides and stuff. Yeah, he's.
I like the little. I like the little one on the bike. Yeah, he's my favourite.
Short, sort of dopey clown, I call him, because he reminds me.
Yeah, I like
it.
He's got a little squeaky voice. I like him.
They're just mischief makers, aren't they?
Yeah, they're like clowns. Well, I thought when they're kind of nervously rifling through the chemist shop, I thought, well, what young hot-blooded male hasn't done that while trying to buy something embarrassing in the chemist shop? Just rifle through the shelves. They just
I know what you mean.
They want clown johnnies.
Is that like a real oversized johnny, sort of like the shoes?
You can fold it into the shape of a dog.
big red. You squeeze it and it makes a sound.
But they're there. They're taking over the town. And so Dave takes Debbie home. And there's kind of a little bit of an awkward, oh, we used to be an item kind of thing going on. And so Dave takes Mike into the woods.
He does threaten to incarcerate Debbie if she doesn't go home.
I can't really see why, but so Dave and Mike go into the woods and the tent is gone, so Dave handcuffs Mike.
Mooney was right about you, you god,
Why, you young schoolboy. And then there's one of my favourite scenes, which is where the little clown, the best clown, we'll call him from now on, goes to meet some bikers who are hanging out in the back of some alleyway.
That's good.
And one of them who speaks jive, he says, look, big bad Jojo coming into town.
I wish more people did start speaking jive.
So the little clown punches a biker's head off.
I do like knocking your block off.
And then that biker turns into an unconvincing dummy, as all people do at some point in their lives.
That's true.
Don't forget the montage of like the clowns going to the doors with like the pizza, with the Goem Andre and the lady having chocolates.
Then there was the sort of it-like scene where one of the clowns is beckoning the small child.
Which is quite horrible.
Yeah. The scene like with the little girl could easily be the It film. And it also came out before the It TV movie came out as well. Food for thought.
But can you imagine if she wasn't saved at the end? This film would have taken a very dark turn all of a sudden.
Because he's got a big hammer behind his back.
Ooh, didn't see that coming.
But but we're back with Dave and Mike, and they've gone up to Makeout Hill, and there's no teenagers there because they've all been abducted. And it seems that every car is covered in this mysterious, sticky, viscous substance. Nothing unusual there.
And just a whole lot of empty champagne bottles clinking around.
Yes. So that's when Mooney starts getting some calls and he just decides to ignore them all. He says, fuck you, and that's the end of that.
He's basically the Crescent Cove answer to Andy Sipowicz.
He is. Or the mayor of Amity.
Yeah.
Just ignore everything.
Just because we haven't said mayor for 10 minutes.
I'm going to edit in a little ding sound every time we say mayor. So then, I know we've talked about Joe Lombardo.
He's dead, isn't he?
He is dead. But in this next scene, we see this man being chased by a clown on the road in a car. Okay. And the guy says, get out of here, Joe.
Oh.
And I'm wondering, have they like mixed some scenes up or something? Have they edited it in a very strange way?
I did read on IMDb that apparently Joe was going to be in the opening scene of the film when there's that
really?
Car scene. It was supposed to go over the cliff and explode as a big, like, star of the film. But something went wrong with, like, the stunt coordinator. So it sort of just, like, fell off into a tree. And then it's too late to do it again. So they then, like, just, like, put that scene later on in the film. Which is why Joe is kind of confusing when they mention him. Because, like, who the hell's Joe?
The mystery has been solved.
That's brilliant. Thank you. That's great.
So you've really taken a deep dive into this.
I always think we prepare for these films, but you've actually done some detective work. That's amazing.
Yeah.
Then Debbie is in the shower, which basically lasts until the third act. She's in there for ages.
Yeah, she's got a lot of popcorn in various hard-to-reach places.
So as she's showering, the popcorn that she's managed to wash out of her hair sort of comes alive.
Yeah.
It starts crawling around the floor. So is that kind of like clown babies?
Yeah, all the little popcorn things, like they're children, but they have like no bodies, just
long necks. It's sort of like alien things, isn't it?
Yeah.
It's also the name of a very bad album, Popcorn Comes Alive.
from Peter Popcorn.
Yeah. Ooh, baby, I love your way.
And then we get another scene that I really enjoyed, which is the hand shadows at the bus stop.
Yeah, that was great. Very clever.
That's great, isn't it?
It's very inventive. There's a lot of inventive sort of moments in this movie.
It's really good. I really enjoyed it.
Clever.
And then they get eaten by a giant dinosaur shadow at the end, which I thought was good.
Yeah, the shadow puppet scene's amazing. It's also weird, like, how come sometimes they can do magic, and then sometimes they can only kill someone with a hammer. It's like, what? Make up your minds, clowns.
And sometimes they can just punch someone's head off.
And sometimes they just cover them in candy floss jizz. Because as I was watching this, I was like, are we ever going to find out, you know, the origin of these clowns? I was thinking, is this an ancient aliens kind of thing where, you know, the clowns came down and visited Earth in sort of prehistory, and this is how we developed our own clowns? And
well, they do hypothesize that later on.
It's weird how, like, the aliens or clowns instantly know how to navigate, like, Earth. Yeah, it could be that they have been there before.
Yes.
It shouldn't make sense of order. And the cocoons in the circus tent.
Yeah, yeah.
That does make sense. But then the bloody Terenzi brothers turn up again. I thought, do we actually need comedy relief with a premise such as this? Because it's sort of comic relief, really. They are the most irritating thing in the film.
Yeah, they kind of have the opposite effect, don't they?
It's nice that the Terenzi brothers are just motivated by boobs. As long as there's big boobs somewhere, they will do anything Mike says.
And Mike knows this, and that's
Mike
how he gets him to join in. Yeah,
he exploits that weakness.
But we get quite a good scene then where the clown gets Mooney. He turns up at the police station and strangles him with one of those party blower things, which was good.
It's weird in that jail scene when, like, the clown for some reason doesn't mind being arrested and put in the cells and having his hands fall off.
Where he pulls his hands off, yeah.
It's very unsettling when he is the ventriloquist dummy. It's actually quite an unsettling scene.
Especially when the clown pulls his hand out.
Oh, was that blood, was it?
Yeah, it was Mooney's back blood, yeah.
I thought it was poo.
You're thinking of Killer Vets from Outer Space. That's a different film completely. So then Dave discovers their weakness. If you shoot the clown in the nose, they explode.
Shoot most things in the nose, they explode.
Mm.
Why do they turn into, like, a crystal green thing? It's a bit like Chucky. I don't know.
Now you're talking.
What's happening? I don't know if they know what Chucky
is. I remember Chucky, yeah.
Mooney would definitely not like Chucky's children.
Chucky?
His kids.
Chucky was a John Wyndham-written children's programme about a boy with a little alien friend who was sort of like a diamondy cloud kind of thing.
Oh, so he wasn't a Triffid?
No, he wasn't a Triffid.
Oh, okay. Okay.
It was then followed up by Chucky's children.
Oh, okay.
Because there wasn't a Mrs. Chucky, so I don't know whether
there was no Bride of Chucky.
Nice. There's a clown procession at this point. Mm. It's like the sort of bring out your dead scene where they're going house to house. They're getting the candy floss scroter and chucking them in the van.
I always thought that Tim Burton was influenced by, like, the clown parades. It seems a bit like the parade at the end of Batman, and also the parade during the Penguin too, with all the people sort of jumping under cars to escape from. I definitely think Burton's been influenced.
You're onto something there.
Yeah, I can see that.
If only Tim Burton was making films as good as this these days.
What is the last decent Tim Burton film?
The last decent one? Big Eyes was quite good, because it didn't feel like a Tim Burton film. But before that,
But he hasn't, like, thought of an original idea for a long time.
I can't even think of the last Tim Burton one.
I reckon Sleepy Hollow is probably his last decent film I'd pay for.
Oh, definitely, yeah.
I actually didn't mind. I didn't love it, but I didn't mind. Oh, God, what is it, Mrs. Something and the little mutant kids. I don't think that's the actual title, but...
But it had the Eva Green factor for you, didn't it?
I do. You know I am very partial to a bit of Eva Green, yeah.
Mm. I can't get past Dark Shadows. I paid money to go and see Dark Shadows.
I saw that at the movies too. It was... Oh, God. It was just awful.
It's still one of the worst films I've ever seen at the cinema.
They didn't have a script, did they? They couldn't have.
It was a moment of silence for Tim Burton's career. There we go.
Mm.
While we're silent, Debbie has finally got out of the shower.
Wow, she must be a prune by now.
Yeah. Her heating bill is going to be sky high. She'd have had that immersion on for hours. But she then gets attacked by one of those popcorn clown heads, the little clown babies.
Yeah.
And there's clowns everywhere. They don't kill her, which they seem to have done with other people. They just turn her into a balloon.
Mm. Why does Debbie end up being in the balloon? Why is it supposed to kill people because they're hungry for clowns? And with her, they just keep her in the balloon. Also, when the clown at the door says that he's Mike, How does he know
Mike
who Mike is?
Mike Tobacco.
How's that work?
He's friends with Nick O'Teen.
Ooh, you beat me to it.
Thank you very much. That's what we're here for.
Mm.
But then there's quite a fun car chase, which is police car chasing an ice cream van chasing a clown car.
I like how all the car scenes are sped up like a 1950s cop film.
Like a really shit sequel to Smokey and the Bandit.
That's saying something. But for some reason, the spaceship, the Big Top, has moved to the amusement park. I suppose it's hiding in plain sight. That kind of makes sense.
Yeah.
And it's time for them to go home. So before that, they melt a security guard with some custard pies.
The custard pie scene is also a scene that I will never forget. And I swear that someone must have a t-shirt with her saying, what are you going to do with those pies, boys?
How do they decide which execution method they're going to use? They have so many at their disposal.
So they've gone to the Big Top. They're about to leave. But Dave, Mike, and the Terenzi brothers, they follow them into the Big Top. They're creeping through. There's a lot of black backgrounds in this, which I thought was quite unusual. There's actually no sort of matte paintings in the background at all. It's all sets and everything else is black, which I assume that's for budgetary reasons or to make it look, give it a bit of a sort of a dreamlike quality. I don't know, but quite interesting design. But the boys, because they're acting the giddy goat, one of them, there's a big red button which you're not supposed to push. So just like Father Dougal, he pushes it and they fall into a big ball. Oh, well, it's not even big. They fall into a small ball pool. where they're seduced by they're seduced by clowns with knockers.
The scene in the ball pit with the ladies just waiting there just in case someone falls into a ball pit was interesting, because I remember as a 11-year-old being quite interested by the ladies with the inflatable boobs, and then later in my teenage years being disappointed when I found out that girls' boobs don't actually do the event. And then I can never find the girl who'd be willing to wear a clown suit for me. Sad times. I had to wait, you know, another 10 years to get the DVD so I could have some alone time.
The Big Top on the screen wasn't the only tent being pitched.
And so they, back in the clean world, our heroes, they find the big play centre that they had before, and it's just full of those pink cocoons, the whole town.
Cocoons?
You know, cocoons, yeah. They're wondering if the clowns have killed them, and then one comes in and drinks, I suppose what can only be described as human juice, through a really long bendy straw.
Yeah.
So I suppose that's then the only real reveal about why they're doing this to the humans. It is, I suppose, a bit like bad taste. It's a food thing.
We need to get a Prometheus-style film to explain all of this for us. Killer Clowns Covenant. Fassbender will be fantastic in it.
As long as he gets to do his fingering, I'm sure he'll be okay. I paid money to see that as well. So yes, they find Debbie in the balloon, and so they decide to burst it with a gun. It'd be much safer to use a pin.
You would have thought.
But the balloons burst, and Debbie falls into Dave's arms, and they're hugging like a loving couple, and Mike doesn't really seem to mind. He's okay with it.
No, he's cool. He's as cool as a pack of menthols.
So there's a bit of a clown chase around the tent. So Dave's getting in a few more nose shots. And then there is one more final clown gag, which is the doors, not the group. There's door upon door upon door. And Mike Tobacco just keeps shouting, another door, another door, another door. As if we didn't notice there were other doors. But then they get trapped in this big room with some clowns. And they're about to be killed, and then the ice cream van comes crashing through to rescue them. Yeah, where did it come from? How did they drive it through the crevice?
The crevice works in mysterious ways.
Then that's when the big boss comes down, as we called him before, Jojo.
Yeah.
Played by one of the brothers. Yeah, Clownzilla. He destroys the ice cream van, which explodes with the brothers in it. So presumably they're dead. Dave does the heroic thing. He tells Mike and Debbie to get away, and he stops to fight Clownzilla. And as he's doing so, the Big Top takes off and starts flying off into space. And this, as you mentioned earlier, Fran, this is where Dave realises that he does have a pin. He's got a badge. And so he stabs Clownzilla in the nose, and he explodes, which for some reason causes the ship to explode. And so everyone that they could have rescued is just dead. He's killed the whole town.
Collateral damage.
Yeah. So that basically means that they've achieved nothing. They didn't rescue anybody. They didn't save anyone. They actually killed people.
Well, they saved themselves.
I suppose.
It's a clown-eat-clown world.
The clown car crashes to Earth, and Dave and the brothers are inside. Oh, I was so relieved that they were hiding in the freezer of the ice cream van, which, of course, we see later on in Kingdom of the Crystal Skull, yeah. So there's your guarantee of quality. And then again, Dave's all over Debbie like a rash. He's just hugging her and kissing her, and she doesn't seem to mind, and Mike doesn't seem to mind. So I was kind of confused. Does that mean that Dave's got the girl?
I have a theory that Mike's true love was Joe Lombardo.
Definitely.
And
poor Joe.
But Dave is kind of like Matthew McConaughey's character in Dazed and Confused, really, isn't he? He was all over her like a stray bit of popcorn.
Plenty of candy floss residue.
Yeah.
You think it's ended, and they look up and go, are they all dead? And then they all get covered in pies.
Mm.
And that's where the film ends. So are these the same kind of acid pies that killed the security guard? So does that mean that they haven't saved themselves?
There is still a clown in present danger.
Is the follow-up ship contains lion tamers.
Yeah.
It's just attacking people with chairs.
It's killer trapeze artists. Swinging everywhere, catching each other.
And that is how the film ends, with that wonderful theme music.
Yeah.
So that does beg the question we will ask our guest, Fran. Was Killer Clowns from Outer Space still any good?
Well, I mean, I enjoyed it. It's dated, but it's the 80s. I noticed on IMDb that they may be making a sequel in 3D.
Yeah, I did see something about that. I think it's got sort of tied up in the rights that Fox were the distributors, who are now owned by Disney. And Disney have kind of said, now we're not interested. So it may be going to one of one of the sci-fi channels or something.
But it's a shame he hasn't directed anything since. So it would be a bit odd for him to go to the studio and say, hey, can you give me millions of pounds to make a new film?
I want $20 million now. What about you, Rob? Do you enjoy it?
The first sort of 10 minutes or so, I thought, oh, God, this is going to be long. Hour and a half. But once the clowns began their chicanery, yeah, I quite enjoyed it because it was clever. I did keep comparing it to Brain Dead because I thought, you know, it's similar kind of horror, comedy, slapsticky, a bit of puppetry, animatronics. And I thought it was better. I thought it was done better. It actually looked really slick. I agree with you, Chris. The set design was really good. The effects, considering they're made on a shoestring budget, really good. Yeah, it was quite clever. It embraced the fact that it was just completely silly and stupid. Performances by the non-clowns, pretty ropey, pretty basic plot. But I probably wouldn't watch it again, but I did. It was actually better than I thought it would be. So I'm going to give it a small G good.
Yeah, I agree. I thought it was going to be absolutely dreadful. It's one of those that you occasionally see little gifs of and you think, oh, it just looks bad. And of course it sort of was, just because the idea of it is so ridiculous.
Mm.
However, I thought it was so charming, and it was clear that the filmmakers made so much of an effort, whether it was with the low budget effects or the set design, the prosthetics, the brilliant theme music. I did enjoy it, so I'm same as you. I'm going to give it a slightly bigger G than you did, but certainly not a very good. So I wouldn't rush to watch it again. But yeah, I thought it was good. I thought it was great fun.
I mean, at the time, I thought there'd be some sort of like spin-off cartoon or something, because I remember in the 90s there was the Return of the Killer Tomatoes cartoon. So I'm surprised they haven't done anything with Killer Clowns, since it's such an easily doable idea.
Yeah.
God, they could have done a really good crossover with Killer Tomatoes and Killer Clowns. Killer Clowns versus Killer Tomatoes. Tomato versus Clown Requiem. Ben Affleck could play the tomato. Henry Cavill could play a clown.
Chris Pratt would definitely be in it, and The Rock.
Yeah.
And because it's a horror remake, Chloe Grace Moretz. There we are.
Yeah,
it's cast. We've done it.
Yep. Andy Serkis, he'll mocap. Yeah, he'll mocap some tomatoes.
He'd play the big top because he is quite an Andy Serkis. Thank you so much.
It's almost as though this entire podcast was just setting you up for that gag, Chris.
I'm playing the long game.
Do they have puns in Australia? An Australian comedian I saw called Daniel Muggerton reckons that punning isn't big. If you're in a comedy show in Australia, they would be
fuck off. Puns are great. We love puns.
Puns are brilliant, but people do refer to them as dad jokes, which is something that I hate. That's a term I absolutely hate. It kind of suggests it's not funny, and I know my puns are brilliant.
Well, you are a dad.
Yeah.
So technically they're not wrong, though, are they, when they call them dad when you're making them?
But no, I crack puns in work constantly, and I'm obviously the funniest person in the office, so yeah, they're great.
Yeah, no, I really enjoy a good pun.
There you go. Yeah, puns do extend to the other hemisphere. So, shall we talk about what's happening next, Rob? I believe it's your choice.
It is my choice next. I've gone with something that's a slightly later era than we've had recently. A seminal work for three sort of powerhouses of cinema, really. So, John Woo, Nicolas Cage.
Excellent.
And Jonathan Travolta.
Jonathan Cage Travolta.
Of course, I'm talking about Face Off.
Brilliant. I haven't seen that for a long time.
I really enjoy it. I think I was a teen when I saw it. I was like 15 or 14 when I saw it. You know, it was that real, when the Travolta naissance was kind of happening after Pulp Fiction. I loved how kind of over the top it was, and we'll just have to see if it's held up. I imagine much like his face and career, it possibly hasn't.
Because, of course, we have done a Cage before, but we've never done a Travolta. So I think we're going to have lots to talk about.
It'll be great.
Looking forward to that. The only kind of things I do remember from it is Nicolas Cage's ridiculous face in certain scenes. So I can't wait.
Yeah, well, there's a lot of faces in that movie. Face Off, yeah. Otherwise, it would just be called Off.
Off. Right, should we wrap it up? We've been talking for bloody ages, so let's do a bit of housekeeping. If you want to get in touch with us, we're on Twitter at StillAnyGoodPod.
Instagram, StillAnyGoodPod.
We're also on Facebook, StillAnyGood. And if you want to email us, we're on StillAnyGood@gmail.com. Fran, you got any social media you'd like to plug?
My personal Twitter is at UK Sound Advice. There's also my comedy podcast devotees Twitter and Facebook page, so I'll be checking out more of your podcasts eventually.
I'm sure you do give very sound advice. If you want to get into counselling.
We're talking about puns. Your Twitter handle at UK Sound Advice is a pun, because you talk about music. You talk about gigs and albums and things.
Yeah, the pun backfired because people thought I review sound equipment, so high fun for you, Seth, would follow me and be slightly disappointed.
Have you got the latest Bose, like Bluetooth?
You go, no, but I went to see Shed 7 last night and they were great.
Hey, look, it's been wonderful having you on.
Thanks for having me. It's been a bit strange with the delay, but hopefully Chris can put something together.
That's all right. I'm the Phil Spector of podcast producing, so...
Oh, you murder people.
It's why I'm never allowed out of the garage. Okay, yeah, thanks very much, Fran. Really appreciate it. That was great fun.
I think when we have Fran on again, can we just do a movie about mayors?
I think we should.
Yeah, great.
Okay, folks, time to go. We will see you all soon.
See ya.
See you. Bye.
JoJo coming into town!